Dr. Richard Cytowic is a rare mix for a research neurologist. He's the son of an artist and a physician, and his career has been about plumbing the connections between the two. He's been nominated for a Pulitzer Prize, written award-winning medical biographies of playwright Chekhov and composer Ravel, but his most famous work for we laymen is about an unusual quirk of the human brain. It's called synesthesia. Dr. Cytowic's book is The Man Who Tasted Shapes. Doctor, welcome.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Now, doctor, what actually is synesthesia?
Well, you know the word anesthesia, meaning no sensation.
Yeah.
Synesthesia means joined sensations, wherein somebody is born with two, three, or all of their senses hooked together, such that my voice, for example, is not only something that they hear, but also something that they see or taste or touch. And we call them synesthetes.
Huh.
They are surprised to discover, as children, that the rest of the world is not like them.
Well, in the book, The Man Who Tasted Shapes, you worked with one particular subject named Michael.
Right.
Could you describe how Michael experienced food?
Well, Michael had a very unusual kind of synesthesia, which was a combination of taste and smell with touch. And he felt things mostly in his face in his face and hands. And he would say, with an intense flavor, a feeling sweeps down my arm into my hands, and I actually feel texture, weight, temperature, as if I'm holding something. And of course, he could see that there wasn't anything in his hand, but he says, nonetheless, it feels like I'm holding something.
I remember something about a chocolate mint pie had 12 columns.
Well, Michael would describe things very elaborately, but he was not being metaphoric, but just describing the sensations. So, chocolate mint, for example, he said, I can reach out into the distance and stick my hand among what feels like a whole bunch of smooth glass columns. And I said, well, how do you know that they're glass columns? And he said, well, I did not really. He said, but I can reach out and I feel the curvature. And it's cool to the touch, so it's got to be stone or marble, but it's so deliciously smooth. I can run my hand up and down. I can't even feel where the top or the bottom end, so it's like a column, and it must be made of glass. So that's why it feels like cold glass columns.
He would be a wonderful food writer.
He was a great dinner companion, I'll tell you that. He was very entertaining.
Did he cook?
Oh, he cooked quite well. In fact, that's how we met. He was my new neighbor in North Carolina. He taught at the School of the Arts. He was a lighting designer. And he invited me to dinner, along with some other people. And he delayed our sitting down to table with the comment, oh dear, there's not enough points on the chicken. Now, his friends laughed and said, oh, what are you smoking? But Michael turned to me, and he was beet red, and said, well, maybe you'll understand. You're a neurologist. I've had this thing all my life where I taste according to touch, and I wanted the chicken to be a pointed, prickly shape. It's come out all round. I can't serve this. And I said, oh, you have synesthesia. And to which Michael said, oh, my God, you mean there's a name for this? he thought he was the only person in the world. He thought this was a very private experience that nobody else could understand. And that's a very typical sentiment among synesthetes.
Doctor, could you perceive the differences in taste in, for instance, that chicken that Michael was perceiving?
Oh, no. To me, chicken is chicken. But Michael was disappointed because when he talked about he wanted it to be a pointed shape, he said, no, it needed to be a prickliness, as if you were laying your hand on a bed of nails. That's what he wanted to do. And so he cooked according to the shape of things, not according to any kind of recipe or starting with, oh, I want this to taste like thyme or garlic. No, he wanted it to have a particular shape. He loved prickly pointed shapes. He loved round, smooth shapes. And so in the early experiments that we did with him, I started out with, things that were completely sour to things that were completely sweet, and then mixed them up in solution. So it was very hard to tell what was 50-50, what was 70-30.
Mm-hmm.
And he could discriminate extraordinarily well these nuances.
So were the sweets round and the sour things or the bitter things prickly?
Bitter was more of a smooth inclination.
How interesting.
Whereas the sweetness did tend to have round and columnar forms. That is, mostly curvature is the idea, that they were curved, and he could rub the curve. He used to love to rub textures. So if we would eat a pate or something, and he would pause for half a second and go, and then he would reach his hand out over the table, and you could see him moving his hand as if he were actually palpating the roughness or the smooth oiled surface that he felt. And he said, oh, this is so wonderful. But it only lasted, a second or two, and then faded away.
How exciting,
though. In the visual, I often say that synesthesia is like fireworks, in the sense that, there's this explosion, something appears, it kaleidoscopes a little bit, and then a second or two later, it fades away. That's what synesthesia is like.
Huh. Are people with synesthesia essentially connecting sort of more of the dots than the rest of us? I mean, I guess what I'm saying is, have they evolved further? Are their brains different?
Oh, their brains are definitely different, and you can prove that with paper and pencil tests, as well as with very fancy million-dollar brain scans. They're not more evolved, but they're simply aware of an earlier process of evolution in which perhaps the senses were more less divided. It turns out that all of us are synesthetic, but we're not aware of it. So synesthetes have a conscious look at an earlier stage of any kind of perceptual process. All the senses sample the world, if only just a little.
Well, Doctor, thank you. And if you ever start working with a chef, will you promise you'll call us?
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Tanya Mosley. In 1987, my sister Anita vanished without a trace. Decades later, thanks to DNA, we found her. But that's only the beginning of the story. She Has a Name is a new audio documentary that explores the search for redemption, confronting trauma, and healing in the face of unimaginable loss. Subscribe now to Truth Be Told Presents She Has a Name, where every revelation brings us closer to the truth.